This is Peace Talks Radio, the radio series and podcast on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. I'm Jessica Tickton, in for series producer Paul Engels. Today, storytelling as social change. Producer Megan Kamrick interviews the founders of Narrative 4, an organization that uses storytelling in classrooms to help young people connect with each other across cultural, racial, and geographic divides.
I mean, we have an epidemic of loneliness and isolation, and people need desperately to connect, not only with themselves, but with others at the same time too. And that's what telling a story and telling somebody else's story does. It connects you with yourself and it connects you with someone else.
How can the power of story build understanding and compassion? That's the idea behind the nonprofit group Narrative 4, which brings together authors with educators and students for story exchange workshops. Since its founding in 2010, the group has held story exchange workshops with people around the world, with a particular focus on classrooms. Independent studies of student cohorts who engaged with Narrative 4 have found increased attendance rates and graduation rates, but also more positive emotions and better communication skills. The workshops have brought together college students with people who were incarcerated, students in the Bronx with students from rural Kentucky, and queer victims of bullying with their former bullies. Co-founder Lisa Consiglio was running a literary organization and a small story exchange in Aspen, Colorado in 2004 when she was inspired to bring together writers from around the world to the mountain town after she met Irish author Colm McCann, whose books include Let the Great World Spin, Transatlantic, and A Paragon.
We went up into the mountains, a group of artists, activists, and we found this sort of nuclear power of storytelling, which it sort of ignited us in this incredible way. We all began to tell one another stories, and that was Terry Tempest Williams, it was Toby Wolfe, it was Ishmael Bea, it was all these fantastic people getting together, sort of telling one another stories, and the power that came from that was phenomenal. And Lisa recognized it, and she recognized that this could be taken globally. So one of the things that we did very early on, we decided that we would be a global organization. And we're now in 30 plus countries around the world and in 36 states in the United States. And it's just growing because, I mean, we have an epidemic of loneliness and isolation, and people need desperately to connect, not only with themselves, but with others at the same time too. And that's what telling a story and telling somebody else's story does. It connects you with yourself and it connects you with someone else.
The format that you have, was that always part of the original story exchange? Like, you tell your story and then that person tells the story as you?
It's actually an old theater technique that has been used for many, many years. And we just took that methodology and placed it in the hands of high school English and art teachers, actually, in the early days. And what we saw happening in some of those classrooms, all those classrooms really, in an area, the Roaring Fork Valley in Colorado, where you've got Aspen, which is known as the playground for the rich and famous, all the way down to Parachute, where immigrants are coming in from all over the world to work in oil fields or work in the service industry. And these barriers, we were breaking down barriers and shattering stereotypes, and these kids were falling in love with one another, and people that they thought they were just natural born enemies or they didn't want to talk to or bully or being bullied. And so it really took shape in the classrooms themselves with that old theater technique. But we added an art component to it. We layered on some curriculum notes, and now Narrative 4, that story exchange, is the entry point onto a very long curriculum. It's designed to sort of split the atom. Now what are you going to do with it? And that is, okay, let's get kids to start engaging with literature again. Young people don't read for pleasure all that much anymore, and that perpetuates a decline in democracy or civic engagement, philanthropy, the list goes on, and that's proven. So we've designed amazing learning modules around some of the best books ever written to get kids engaged with learning, whether it be with a unit or an entire module, and also civic engagement, which is the through line of the organization. They connect with artists, and of course they connect with other kids all over the world or in their own communities to decide what they want to change about the world because they have now understood what it means to be human by walking in the shoes of another, engaging with a book that they may not have read, and also engaging with an artist that cares about them and their community.
It starts with a story, and it ends with a changed life, and hopefully then ends up with a world that's slightly shifted from where it started out.
What are some of the most challenging places you've gone with this?
So NARRATIVE4 is not a conflict resolution organization, and it's not a rapid response organization, but what we decided to do very early on is have a more nuanced approach to areas that are steeped in conflict. So we don't go necessarily to Israel and Palestine and say, oh, look, today we're going to connect you, but we may connect kids in Tel Aviv with kids in Chicago and kids in Nablus, Palestine in the West Bank with kids in Sarasota, Florida, or Lagos, or what have you. And so they're learning about the world and that conflict has been around for a very long time. We are human and we all want the same things, that we may go about it in very different ways. And eventually the hope is that they will want to connect with each other, but it's organic. It's not some American or other organization coming in and saying, this is what you will do. It's them saying, this is what we want to do. This is what we're comfortable with. Certainly working in the Middle East, of course, and the American South, all over. These days, pick a town.
Yeah, we've been to Belfast, and we've been to the West Bank, and we've been to Gaza, and we've been to the South Bronx. But, you know, this conflict is everywhere, and we all know it. No matter whether we're in Albuquerque or we're in New York or we're in Dublin, this conflict is sort of within ourselves in many ways. So one of the great things about the NARRATIVE4 exchange is that it can sort of belong to everyone. So there's no Olympics for storytelling. You don't get the gold medal for a certain type of, you know, grief that you had or difficulty in your story. The story can be any type of story, and people connect then in the most extraordinary ways. It could be a funny story, it can be a love story, it can be a tale of terrible grief or belonging or loss, all of these different things. The world is knit together with stories. That's how we recognize and know one another, even across barriers, boundaries. This is the one thing that we have. It's sort of the essence of democratic intent, that everybody has a story and everyone has a deep need to tell a story, but even better, to listen to someone else's story.
Just to add on to that, we're not out to change minds. We're out to help open them to a certain extent. We're not asking people to change their values. You can hold on to the integrity of your beliefs and your values, but to really understand, as Colm said, we're human, and stories are the thing that make us the most human.
So in the group I was in, one pair had a very intense exchange, and as the man told the young man's story, he started to tear up and get very emotional, even though it's not his story. Have you seen that a lot?
I saw it in my group too. I mean, I teared up telling the story of this young 17-year-old girl who, her parents are from Syria, without giving too much away because these stories are held in place. She told me the most heartbreaking story about whether she felt to be American or Syrian. And she said, well, I come from the country of nowhere. And then she eventually said, well, but I'm somebody in this country of nowhere. I teared up trying to articulate her story. And yeah, it happens a lot. It happens an awful lot. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, we expose ourselves and our emotions in extraordinary ways through telling something that's powerful to ourselves. Sometimes we ask young people, tell us a story that if you buried it in the ground and someone came along 100 years from now and dug it up and listened to it, they would know the essence of you. And so people tell some really profound and fascinating stories.
When one of the groups broke, one of the women who was in that particular group came up to me and said, I just became a 17-year-old again. And she said, I cannot believe, she had tears in her eyes, how much of myself I recognize in that person. And that's the power. This is a very, very simple thing. It's storytelling. But what happens is you recognize yourself in almost every single person that you connect with through a story exchange and otherwise. And that is the power. That's the atom right there that's being split, is, wow, we are all part of one another. We're part of this beautiful blue marble. One of the very first story exchanges that we ever had was with a Vietnam veteran told the story of a young girl who took her teddy bear to college, and he teared up. He was actually in this absolute mess because he remembered taking his teddy bear to Vietnam and having to hide it and what, you know, of course, everything that he saw. And it was just an incredible story. And like, people have accused us sometimes in a nice way of rigging this, pairing people up accordingly. We have no idea. No, it's totally random. That's what happens when you're a human being.
People have this idea when you say the word story, oh, that it's going to be something airy or kumbaya or something like that. But no, the fact of the matter is that stories can be dangerous. Stories can take your house away. Stories can take your country away. Stories can be used in all sorts of ways to change the perception in the universe. So we have to be very, very, very careful to understand these are stories about difficulty too, and about grief and all these things. It's not just something where we all get together and go, you know, running over the hills singing The Sound of Music. It isn't like that. In fact, I feel after I've done an story exchange, incredibly raw and alive at the same time, which is a really wonderful place to be.
People can fall in love with their or stuck in their own stories or narratives, which could stop them moving forward. Does this seem to shake that loose?
Well, I think what happens is people realize that they're not one story. You know, we contain so many narratives. But also what happens is when you hear someone else tell your story as if it is their own, you're hearing the way that you're telling your own narrative. And so it might be like, wow, that's the way I sound, right? Like that's what people are getting. And maybe it jogs something within you that says, oh, maybe that's what people are stereotyping me, or maybe that's why I've been perceived as X, Y, or Z. And I do think it shakes it loose in these perceptions of ourselves and how we're being portrayed or how we're portraying ourselves. And that's what a story exchange can do. It's not just about learning about somebody else. It is, as Colin said, about learning more about yourself and shaking some of that.
I'm going to ask you a question. How does this make you feel? Hi, my name is Megan.
A little guarded, intrigued. What's going to happen?
All right. So if I get a chance to tell your story, you know, it's strange. You know, here's this voice coming from Ireland, coming from elsewhere, and inhabiting your story. I may get parts of it wrong, but I will get the texture of it right. And somehow you sort of hover outside of yourself. Like if I say to Lisa right now, hi, my name is Lisa. And, you know, when 10 years ago I started this organization, things happen in her brain that are different to her saying the exact same words. The brain, when we tell our own story, is like a circus. There's all sorts of things going on, and there's all sorts of spectacular acrobatics going on. But when we tell somebody else's story as well, it's like a carnival. You're accessing imagination, you're accessing memory, you're accessing empathy, you're accessing all sorts of different things, including your own experience. There's a lot of brain power going behind telling somebody else's story.
I think the key is that we're not just telling someone else's story. We're telling it as if it is our own. I think that we have to keep coming back to that. My name is. We're not just saying when you were. And that's when the pinball machine starts lighting up in the brain, like boom, 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 everything, because you're suspending engagement with the rest of the world. It is an honor to hold that person's story, a piece of their life, a piece of their narrative. You want to stop. You have to. Public speaking, and you know, is so terrifying already, but when you're telling somebody else's story, is it terrifying? Yes, it's like Colm said, you're being vulnerable. And vulnerability is a muscle, and it takes exercise. And once you, but it's also fun and imaginative and heartwarming, and takes us out of our shell and our comfort zone to the point where we're like, I want to get out there and engage with the rest of the world.
So much of the world, we're coming indoors these days. We're locking down ourselves. We're putting GPS coordinates on our imaginative intent. We're closing the curtains. We're all coming into these smaller and smaller rooms. We're becoming so much more atomized. What happens then when you break out of those rooms and you begin to acknowledge others is that the world is actually it's a more joyful, fascinating place to exist. And also you recognize deeply human things, but it's a bigger, better place.
My experience was when the young woman, a teenager, told my story, was that, well, yeah, I mean, it was really short, and I guess she got it. I'm like, I had a lot more flourishes. But then when the final exercise, when you write a note of hope, what she wrote to me was so wise, and she got me. She went right to the core. That's when I got teary-eyed.
I think that, we do. We see ourselves in others, and people do get you. And the essence of the story, that's what needs to be captured. But at the end of the day, it's also about the relationship. You'll never forget that person. You know, I've had people that I've been working with for 15 years who did a story exchange back in 2008 or whenever, still say to me, I still keep in touch with that person. We were in a room together for 2 hours, but I feel like she's a part of my soul now, because that relationship was established in a very fast, mock speed type of way that you'll never forget.
My partner made a mistake, which was kind of gorgeous. You know, I told her my son was a cyclist, And when she came back to retell the story, she said, my son was a psychologist. And I thought, wow, that's kind of true in a way, because my son had been listening to me, and the mistake didn't matter as long as she got the full intent of the story, which she absolutely did. I told a story about an incident that had happened to me in New Haven when I ended up in hospital. And she got it and she told it as if it were her own. Of course, details were changed and slightly misremembered, but not the deep truth of it. The deep truth of it was there. Mm-hmm. And that was really powerful for me.
Why is this so impactful beyond today? It seems like it has a lasting change.
One of the major reasons that Narrative 4 was formed and that the vision was established was in 2010, right after the first earthquake in Haiti. There were two teams. One went into New Orleans, one went into Port-au-Prince. Obvious common denominator being natural disaster at that point. The kids went through a virtual, of course, story exchange, and they fell in love with one another virtually. So we knew we had international components. We also knew that we had virtual components, so we could pull all this together. But what I learned right after the story exchange is that these kids wanted to know everything about one another. They wanted to know their history, their politics, their music, what they saw when they looked out the window. So there was this whole educational component to it that I saw, wow, we could really change the way kids learn in classrooms. There is a fade effect with the story exchange. It's kind of like going to a concert. I'll date myself in the 80s with the cigarette lighter. Yeah, this, that, and the other. And you're like, oh, whatever you're telling me to do, I'm going to do it. You walk out of the concert, you know, maybe 2 hours, 3 hours, a day later, you're sort of like, I don't know. What we try to do is continue that experience in different ways, always with the story exchange, going back to it so there's connectivity in different ways, always in person first, then virtual, but having these kids engage with one another in different meaningful ways so that education, that experience, that human connectivity continues long after the story exchange. And as I said, it's a very, very long continuum that goes into when they enter a corporation or a law firm or nursing school or the Peace Corps, or whatever, you know, and they can carry that with them and continue to use what they've learned. So it doesn't fade.
So, for example, the kids in the South Bronx, you know, started groups where they actively engage with people who have been victims of gun violence. The kids in Kentucky engage with groups where they talk about opioid use and abuse. Kids in South Africa started this whole gorgeous program of trash to treasure, taking recycling and so turning that stuff into action. Story then becomes action at the end. I do believe in that sort of emergent power of storytelling, that it can be greater than the sum of its parts. And I think what's new and different about what's happening, what we see happening in front of our eyes, is that this is coming from what some people might call the underneath. It's actually coming from the ground upwards. It's not being imposed from outside. We're not coming into a community and saying, you know, this is what you have to do. All of these stories come from the ground. And then these young people recognize the common denominator, and then they begin to change things as a result.
This is Peace Talks Radio. I'm producer Megan Kamrick. This is an interview that I did during the 2023 Santa Fe Literary Festival with Lisa Consiglio and author Colin McCann. They're co-founders of Narrative 4. It's a global network of artists, teachers, and students using creative tools to teach compassion and develop strong student leaders in the classroom and community. At the core is the Story Exchange, where people come together to share and then tell one another's stories.
You're working mostly with young people. I mean, we had adults and young people here today, but is it always young people?
So when we started out, our target audience was 15, 16, 17-year-olds, and they're mostly sophomores and juniors in high school. That holds true from a metrics point of view lens. People ask, who's your target audience? Everyone. Everyone needs this. Everyone. You know, adults need it, corporations need it, politicians need it, moms, school boards, certainly children, artists, everybody needs it. The reason we chose that, and again, just having dealt with these kids for a very long time when I was still in Colorado, their thinking is so fresh. They think they know so much about the world, and yet they know they don't somehow. And so they're little sponges, and they're not siloed. They haven't been asked to declare a major. They haven't been asked to declare what their politics are. So they're very open, and they're old enough to be able to understand the value of these relationships and what connectivity actually means, and to have fun, to spark the imagination and allow this to be something where they actually inform us much more than we could ever inform them.
And also, I mean, you have a captive audience. You have our schools. Mm. And for me, some of the great heroes in this country or anywhere around the world are the teachers. And I don't think we pay our teachers enough. I don't think we pay our teachers enough respect. But they have in the palms of their hands a captive audience, which, you know, is open to the idea of learning. So it's great to work with young people, but I have to say it's artists and teachers as well who are fundamental to what we do at Narrative 4.
You just said all these groups who need it, would you extend to all these other groups? I hear what you're saying about the young people.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to take it to Congress. I mean, wouldn't that be fantastic? And if we could actually get them to sit on their rear ends for a couple of hours and listen to one another, truly listen to one another, I really do think that there would be some shifting and changing. We might have to strap them down somehow, but it would be great to do an exchange at some of the highest political levels as well as anything else, because it happens everywhere.
Arguably, right? Congress is supposed to represent the people. And so eventually, we are a grassroots organization. We don't go to principals. We don't go to superintendents. We go to kids. We go to teachers and let it trickle up. So eventually, these congressmen and women hopefully will pay attention to what the people are saying. And yes, hey, wait a second. We're supposed to be helping make better lives and shaping the future and getting past all this bickering and infighting and bureaucracy and red tape and so forth. So I agree. I would love to let it find its way naturally and organically. Or maybe not. Maybe one day we'll get a call from, I don't know, somebody and, hey, come on down. Sure.
Yeah.
We'll be there.
And it's not a matter of left and right or up and down or whatever else that you want it to be. The great thing about stories is that it can take the whole spectrum in. Sometimes if people are coming from absolute different ends of the spectrum, you get this incredible dynamic that goes on and they really do get changed. Mm. But I think most people who go through a story exchange get changed anyway. Lisa has seen it through all sorts of different groups and, you know, whether it be people on one end of the political spectrum to the other end, one end of like consciousness to the other end. We've worked in, say, West Belfast, East Belfast, worked with immigrants and people who are anti-immigrant. We've worked with gun groups and so on. And then when they step into that other person's world, they somehow get knocked off balance a little bit. And all their comfortable balance gets shot out from underneath them. And suddenly they begin to think in a brand new way. Hopefully then that new way of thinking translates into a deeper long-term engagement.
These issues are not black and white. The reason for owning a gun may be very different than you might think right off the bat. They snap judgments. And as Colm said, we did this amazing project up and down the spectrum from gun rights advocates to gun banning. And it was incredible. We've done it all over the place in immigrant issues. And the list just goes on and on. And again, people come together in these ways after a story exchange and realize, wait a minute, it's not just that far one way or that far another. There are actually different shades of many different shades of gray.
Just for example, this is a personal example. A young lady from the South Bronx goes down and exchanges a story with a young man from Eastern Kentucky, and he has a rifle in his pickup truck. And she doesn't know why he would have to have a rifle until he tells her the story that he goes out every day and he shoots rabbits and brings them home and puts food on the table. And she says, wow, I never realized that, white people, for instance, would have that hunger in their lives or have a need to do this sort of thing. Oh, now I realize why he has that rifle in the back of his pickup truck. And suddenly it becomes messy. The world is messier, and messy in a good way. And I like the three words, I don't know. I think we've forgotten in this day and age. We're all so certain of ourselves. We don't say, I know this, and I know you come into the room if you look like me, or you sound like me, or you vote like me. But really the beauty lies in the I don't know, the sort of nuanced area where everything becomes murky and beautiful at the same time.
How do you decide where to go?
So at first, again, organic. When I was living in Chicago in 2013, I was working in a school. The teacher introduced me to someone who was living in South Africa that he thought would love to have this program. When Sandy Hook occurred, we were connected to a person who is now the director of global programs for us and has been with us for 9 years. And because of what happened in Sandy Hook, someone in Tampico reached out to Newtown High School to this particular Lee Keelock and said, I really want to help. So we got connected to Tampico and we're still there. And so for a while it happened organically. Now we have a COO whose skill set very much involves scalability. And so now it's a more targeted approach. Part of the reason that we're in Santa Fe is, okay, we've got a community college here, we have high schools here, we have a literary festival here, we've got the makings of a real hub for narrative for, and we can see it getting out and moving out really, really quickly. So even though there are elements that's still organic in some ways, we actually have much more of a plan and a strategy to grow our programs exponentially or scale our programs exponentially over the next 2 to 5 years, especially in the United States.
And I know you have studies showing kids have improved reading, improved behavior. Have you gotten the sense of people who've done this improved the peacefulness of their lives in general?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to oversaint it or overpraise it, but people do get changed. Once you get shifted, then there's no shifting back. And they carry it on in all sorts of ways. They get involved. We've had young people who did story exchanges 10 years ago who are now, central to the organization, watching it grow and bringing it out there, which is kind of amazing to me to watch these people who are 15 years old who are now in their mid-20s and thinking, okay, well, one of the things that might possibly save us is our ability to tell our stories and the stories of someone else. So I wrote a novel called A Paragon, which is a weird word. And a paragon is a shape with a countably infinite number of sides. And I find this whole process to be a paragonal. You know, maybe that word will filter into our consciousness, because I do think it's wonderful, the idea that we have a infinite way to live our lives. And sometimes that infinity exists in the ability to tell someone's story.
People over and over have told us, my listening is so much better now. I listen better. I'm actually hearing you.
I felt that strongly in my group because I'm a little bit of an extrovert and I want to engage and ask questions, but not being able to do that opened up kind of a different part of my brain.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm an extroverted thinker. I've been called, I talk my way to my point, and to actually stop and actually really deeply listen to someone else's story, to feel a part of their life, and the honor of carrying that with you, as intimidating and scary as it is such a part of the human experience that we just don't seem to be allowing ourselves to do all that often. And I think, politics and media, we're tired of being screamed at. I think we just don't necessarily know it. We actually do want to turn it off for a little while and just engage with another person. And it's fabulous.
If someone is not fortunate, as I was, to take part in this, do you have some advice for how to take these principles into our lives?
Yeah. My advice to someone who wants to know what's going on is hop onto narrative4.com, where you can go through the training. You can actually go through an exchange. You can meet people from all around the world and exchange online, and also become a facilitator and then become part of this group that's growing so rapidly that my head is spinning here as I speak. We're going out to countries all over the world and to people all over the world.
You can find out where we're going to be, which communities you can join us in person. We welcome one and all.
That was Lisa Consiglio and author Colin McCann speaking with producer Megan Kamrick during the 2023 Santa Fe Literary Festival. They're founders of Narrative 4. The global organization uses story exchange workshops and related curricula to help people engage by telling one another stories. You can find more about them and their work at peacetalksradio.com. Look for Season 22, Episode 2. That's Season 22, Episode 2. To see pictures, listen to full interviews, read and share transcripts, and to find out more information about all of our guests, go to peacetalksradio.com. That's where you'll find all the programs in our series dating back to 2002. peacetalksradio.com is also where you go to sign up for our podcast, and importantly, to consider a donation to our nonprofit media organization to keep this program going into the future. All at peacetalksradio.com. Nola Daves Moses is our executive director. Ali Adelman composed and performs our theme music. I'm supervising producer Jessica Tickton, sitting in for series producer Paul Ingalls today. Thanks so much for listening to and for supporting Peace Talks Radio.